The meeting will come to order. We do have a quorum, so could I have a motion to approve the minutes for January 18th? Representative Faust has moved approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, you will get a notice, but next Tuesday, some of you serve on Representative Mariani's committee, so you already know this, but next Tuesday we are not having committee during the day. We are having committee meeting at night. And Representative Dominguez, I would like you to explain to the members where we're going.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Next Tuesday, we're going to District 58B, which is on the north side of Minneapolis. Location will be at the Urban League, right on the corner of Penn and Plymouth. We're going to hold our hearings there, along with Carla Mariani's policy. It's going to be a combined hearing meeting. We're going to have some testimony, and we're going to have a regular meeting, I believe, Madam Chair. And hopefully all the members can attend that meeting. We should get a very good education out of this meeting that's coming up. I just want to thank your staff, too, for help putting that together for us. And I look forward to it. It's one of its kind that has ever happened, I believe, that the hearing has been out in the community. And I thank you, Madam Chair, for that opportunity. So that's where I believe we will be next Tuesday. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dominguez. And we did, for those of you, and most of you were, at the Humphrey Institute, we had a challenge from former Governors Quay and Anderson to really go out in the community, and they both mentioned North Minneapolis. And so since it's close, and we have Representative Dominguez on our committee, and we are highlighting the achievement gap, we decided to go there, and we may go to a couple other sites sometime soon, because we know that the achievement gap does not exist only in Minneapolis. And so, but we look forward to that. You will be getting communication from the committee staff to find out if you are taking the bus, and give you details about that. But we will have a bus so we can all go together and have camaraderie on the way over and discuss things on the way back. Representative Dominguez?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can do this right now,
please.
I'm proud of one of our members that sits right on our aisle here. If you haven't seen today's paper, speaking of education, I think we should applaud our Representative Bob Dimmer for being part of Forest Lake High School, which he's now going to leave and put full-time into the legislative agenda. He's done some fine work over there. I had to mention that because as I was reading the paper, I seen his nice, fine picture in there, and he's doing a fine job over there. I think that just says for itself that we have some good people that want to believe in education. So I think we should applaud him for that.
Thank you, Representative.
On a bipartisan manner.
Absolutely. And congratulations to Representative Detmer. And if anyone didn't happen to see it, it was not only a nice picture, but it was above the fold. And we are proud of you, and we're modeling here what we want to do for the students around the state. Find good things, best practices, and point them out. Representative Detmer.
Madam Chairman, Chair, thank you for the kind words. And it is going to be hard, though, to this dream to retire from education and coaching. But if I had a chance, if I was going to graduate tomorrow from Bemidji State University, I would do it all over again. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, and you are just beginning your own education here. We learn every day. I know I do. Okay. Members, each of you has a budget book. And I feel like a teacher telling you this, but this is your budget book. And our staff has been working frantically for all maybe more than just today. And we do have, I'm going to have our pages introduce themselves when we're on television. But we have Megan and Maggie over there, and Maggie Shea in the green or blue sweater is our new committee staff, and you met Megan before. But next time we're on TV, we're going to have them come up and introduce themselves again. But for now, just know that we thank them very much, and all the other committees that loaned us their pages so we could have our budget books for today. And they are the only budget book you're going to get. So if you forget it, if you take it over to North Minneapolis and leave it on the bus, you're just going to have to find a friendly neighbor to share. And you will want to maybe occasionally take it home with you to study, especially if there's things that are interesting to you. But I would recommend most of the time, if you're forgetful like I am, that you just leave it here in committee. And then every day when you come, it will be right at your spot with our wonderful staff. But you are free to take it home and do what you want with it. But just be warned, it's your only one. There will not be a replacement unless you want to have your own assistant pull it off the internet, which is where this budget book came from. And then just one announcement for the public. Because these are, you know, very, very time-consuming to assemble, we haven't assembled them from the public because this whole budget book is on the internet. And it's at www.finance.state.mn. I'm going to repeat that so that you can scroll down and get whatever you're interested in and print it out yourself. But again, it is www.finance.state.mn.us. And if anybody forgets that or needs it again, you can always check with our very handy committee staff. And now, members, we have, I think this is an interesting part of the legislative session. We've been having overview sessions, and now we're going to get an overview from Greg Crow and Tim Strom of the governor's budget. And then we will be pleased to welcome Commissioner Segrin, who's here to help with that as well as Tom Melcher, who is right behind her in the second row. And he is one of the people, like the two to my right, one of the few people in the state who understands every detail of the state budget. And we were bragging, Mr. Melcher, when we introduced our staff that the governor's office has one of these people and the Senate has one, but we have two. So I don't know, you two, do you want to work from here or go down to the table? Work from here. Okay, Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, we won't take a lot of the commissioners' allotted time. We'll just orient you a little bit to your budget book. And I wanted especially to point out the spreadsheets at the beginning. So you have two tabs at the very beginning of your budget book that have spreadsheets that we've created for you to kind of follow that summarize the whole budget, not just the things that the governor recommended change items for, but the whole budget, and you can kind of see them all in context. So there'll be one that says appropriation tracking in the upper left, and that should be under your aids tab, and then there's one that says levy tracking in the upper left, and that should be under your levy tab. Let's just take a look at the first page of the appropriations tracking and get a sense of how this is laid out. The first group of lines, rows 6 through 9, describe what's happening with the basic funding formula. So you can see that the base years are the first four columns after basic formula amount, the program's described. Then there's four columns that have the base in it: fiscal year 08, fiscal year 09, the biennium, and then just the biennial total for 10 and 11. So you can see that the basic formula is 49.74. Then the balance of the columns all tie back to the governor's recommendations. So you can see the fifth narrow column from the left is the governor's recommendation for fiscal year 2008. So for the basic formula, the governor's recommending $5,074, which is a $100 increase or a 2% increase. And then you can see that same change in fiscal 09. And then you can see that it's flat for 10 and 11. So for any particular program, you can see what the governor is proposing relative to what we call the base. Most of your decisions will be made relative to base. Your target will probably be set as a dollar amount relative to the base amount. So the first big appropriation that you see is on line 11, and that's the general education appropriation, and that's always the biggest one. In this appropriation, I've separated all of the governor's change items out. In the bill, there actually will just be one line that the total will look like what's on line 31. But for your decision-making and understanding purposes, we've separated all of those changes out and described the cost implications for each of those changes. And so you can see, for example, on line 12, the actual cost of that basic formula increase is $93,279,000 in 08 and $198 million in 09. And you can see again in 10 and 11 what the ongoing costs of it are. If you look in the program name and you see it, it's italicized, that means it's a change item. So as you're skimming down, say you're looking down through line 34, and you see, well, tax-based replacement aid, what did the governor do with that? There's two places you can see. One, it's not italicized, so there, and hopefully I caught all of those so that it's not a change. But then if you go over to the 1, 2, 5th column from the right, you see governor's rec minus base. And in that column is all of the total for the biennium, how much the appropriation will change. So for that example on line 34, there's a zero there, so there wasn't a change. But on two lines down on line 36, where we have abatement aid, the governor's making a recommended change. So you can see the base in the first two columns, the $1,005,000 in the base, and then the governor's recommending $2.9 million for a net increase relative to the base of $1.4 million. So as you flip through, you can see those kinds of changes through all the way through the budget. And if you go to the very bottom or the very middle of page 3, lines 146, 7, and 8 are kind of the sum totals of the program budget, not including the agency operating budget. So if you're wondering how much got added to the K-12 programs, you look at line 148, and you see that the base budget for 08-09 was $12,700,000,000, and the governor's recommending $13,434,000,000, which is a net increase of $720,702,000 over the base. So when we talk about the governor adding $720 million, that's what we're talking about. $721 million, that's the change relative to the base budget. And then on the levy side, it's laid out the same way. There are a lot fewer changes that impact property taxes, but you can see the same types of groupings and columns. There's two columns on the next to the program description that are 6 and 7, and then each year you get the base amount, which in this case is the certified estimate. So for fiscal 08, we're not making any changes because we're already in pay 07, and so the changes start in fiscal 09, pay 2008. So for example, on line 8, the equity program is italicized. The base budget for fiscal 09 is $75,999,000. The governor's recommending $76,674,000, a net increase of property tax levies for that program of $675,000. And you can go to the bottom again and see that on line 162, total school district levies are reduced under the governor's proposal by $43,100,000, and that's related to an operating capital change that's the biggest piece of that I'm sure the commissioner will talk about. So that kind of orients you to what the overall budget is, what the governor's recommendations are, and how you can find them quickly and how much they are.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Crow. Any questions? Representative Sistrom.
Madam Chair, I'm looking back at the AIDS section, and I noticed on line 148, when we were looking kind of at the base of where we were starting, that line 149, had a negative 3% in the November forecast. Why would that be negative if that's kind of the base that we're working off of?
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, the line 149 is the change from the prior year or the biennium, rather than the change from base. So So, for example, if you look at line 148, between fiscal year 08 and 09, it goes down slightly from $6,380,000,000 to $6,332,000,000. So that's an 0.8% drop from that, from 1 year to the next. The $12.7 billion is a comparison to the prior biennium, since it's in the biennial column. And so, so there's a 3% reduction, and there's a variety of reasons why there's a reduction from the 06-07 biennium, the largest being that we made a lot of one-time shift buy-off payments in 06-07. So there's actually less money. The state's actually paying out less money during 08-09, primarily because of that. There's also things happening with declining enrollment, and or as in, you know, things are, you know, aid is going down, and as property tax grows, we lose some of the aid in the equalized formula categories. That aid goes down. So there's just a variety of things that are contributing to less aid from one biennium to the next. But the biggest is paying off the shifts that occurred last biennium.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then to follow up with that, so then along that same line, when it's 4.3% up and 2.5% up in the 08-09, that is comparing to the 08-09 column that we were just in, or
that's
your problem?
Madam Chair, members, that's comparing to the prior year for the relevant category. In other words, those are the governor's columns. So the 08 number compares to base 07, which isn't shown on here.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And 09 compares to governor 08, not base 08.
Mm-hmm. That's a Heiberkin.
Yes, just to follow up on the shifts, I know we took care of that. My understanding, and there's still a couple shifts in play that we haven't taken care of, and I think one is the property tax recognition shift, and I believe the other one would be the special ed. I think there's a delay in payment there as well. Am I right on that?
Mr. Krupp.
Madam Chair, members, the special ed is funded with a two-year lag, so it's different than the accounting shifts that you're familiar with. The property tax recognition shift was paid off. Is a referendum still have a tiny bit of shift? We still have a bit of shift in the referendum, but it's basically all the shifts that were enacted because of the budget constraints in 2003 have been paid off.
Representative Greco, the staff thinks you had your hand up. Did you? No. Okay. If there aren't any other questions, then thank you, Mr. Crow, very much. And we all know that any time in between committee hearings, if you have questions, you can always go to Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow and ask your questions of them as well. Commissioner Segrin, I think we're ready for you. And by way of introduction, there are sometimes strange friendships that develop at the Capitol. Not that Representative Segrin or Commissioner Segrin and my friendship is strange, but there are sometimes friendships that you notice and you think, why did that member, why are they hanging around? They just together. They don't seem like they're even similar or anything, and you will notice then that they are members of the same class. And I notice on this committee that Representative Garofalo and Representative Dietrich appear to be friends, and they're from the same class. We have a lot of appear to. Maybe I'm mistaken, you know. We have a lot of first-term members who, you know, another 10 years from now may end up being great friends, and maybe a lot of them won't still be here, but the ones that are, other people will wonder, why are those two such good friends? Because they don't seem to be anything alike, and it could be that they are just from the same class. But in the case of Commissioner Segrin and I, we actually knew each other and were friends before we came to the legislature, and neither of us even knew the other one was running until we made it to the House retiring room after the election. And I thought maybe she worked here. I wasn't sure. But we now are 15 years later, both still in a position where we can work together. We always have very well. We don't agree on everything, But on education, we've agreed on the bulk of things, I think, that we've worked on. And just one last thing, Commissioner Seeger, do you remember that first bill that we worked on as first termers together, that we thought we had such a very good idea? It was bipartisan. The committee chair, Kathleen Bellinga, supported it and told us to go forth and work on it, and we did. And I don't know how many of the lobbyists or governmental relations people in the audience are the same people as there were back then. I think it's mostly different people. But I don't think any of the ones here at the time liked our bill. Do you?
Mm-hmm. No, they didn't.
One after another, they came up and testified against it.
And
so.
And as a matter of fact, that whole idea actually has come to fruition.
Well, maybe we'll talk about that at some point. But always remember, there's more than one way to skin a cat around this place. Commissioner Seegren, and then with her is Tom Melcher from the Department of Education, and he is one of the... How many people would you say, Mr. Melcher, exist in this state that understand the education formula?
Well, Madam Chair, I'd say there are quite a few school district business managers and superintendents around the state that are very knowledgeable about the school finance formula, as well as folks at the department and in the legislature. I think there are probably hundreds that understand a lot of the parts of the formula.
Parts of the formula is key. We're talking about people that understand the whole thing, and Mr. Melcher is certainly one of those people. Commissioner Seegren, if you could introduce yourself for the tape, of course, and then tell us anything you'd like to tell us about the governor's and your budget.
Thank you. Well, thank you, members, Madam Chair and members. I'm Commissioner Alice Seegren. I represent the Department of Education. And I'm so very glad to be here with you today and glad to see friends that I've served with in the past. And also want to welcome those of you who are new to the process. You're in for a wonderful opportunity to help craft education for our students. And I'm looking forward to meeting many of you that are new. Hopefully we'll be able to set up some time to meet and get acquainted, and look forward to meeting or working with all of you that are new also, and looking forward to having you give us a call. And if you have ideas that you think are good ones, we'd certainly welcome that input also. And also want to recognize, too, Dr. Melcher. He is just extraordinary, as is are your staff, Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow. And you're very lucky to have the support, and you will find them just wonderful to work with. So we really appreciate all the expertise. I'll go right into our budget, and I'm going to kind of give you a general overview of the governor's proposal. A little bit was touched on as far as the financial aspects. The governor has proposed a 2% increase on the formula, and you know what that will cost. It's about $300 million for the biennium. In addition to that, he has also proposed rewarding schools that meet or exceed a three-star rating based on our five-star rating that has been developed in line with No Child Left Behind, and that would be a site who would get either a three or better rating in either math or reading. So that is about another $150 million that he proposes to reward school districts. Now, remember when No Child Left Behind came about 5 years ago, and we were all kind of complaining about the sanctions and no recognition of good work being done. And so I think the governor is also trying to recognize that we should reward schools for doing good things. I know there's also been some comment about the fact that, well, you have school districts that maybe have easier to teach kids, if you will. But those schools, normally under No Child Left Behind, as you know, the percentages go up every year as to how many students need proficiency. And if you're at an 85 or 90% proficiency, it's going to be very difficult for you to move from that 90 to, you know, as we all know, the 100%. So you may not actually see as much movement in those upper categories as you will for districts that maybe have a larger way to go but can make those steps maybe more possible for them. But this is a proposal that the governor would like to see enacted. I think his philosophy, whatever happens on this legislative session, is that we need to be looking at how we are appropriating money and expecting to reward results, and also to look at the expectation of you know, what is happening with the money that's appropriated. We want it to be used effectively and efficiently, and I think that is you know, what I think we all desire too. As I've talked to many of you, that is your desire, and I know that that has been in the past with those members that I've worked with before. So that will be part of the governor's initiative. In other areas, he has also proposed, as you know, last year we passed on a bipartisan basis the QComp quality compensation proposal. He's also proposing that be linked to the formula to really send the message. There's been some question about, well, is this going to go on? And it is a categorical already, but the governor is proposing it to be linked so that it's clear that it doesn't lose its buying power over time. And then also, we know that by the end of 2007 that we'll be about at the limit of what we have appropriated, and so he also is proposing in 2009 to increase the QComp program by 10%, and then he would like to continue growing that until it's completely funded and every district is eligible for it. And so there's a clear signal that and intent that we would like to continue growing the program. In addition to that, there are some 2% increases in addition to the formula, and Dr. Melcher, if I forget some of them, we'll highlight those for you. For example, we propose to add a 2% increase for LEP. We know that that has been a frozen amount of money for a number of years, and we know that many districts are seeing more and more English language learners coming to their school districts, and so we're proposing a 2% increase each year of the biennium to start growing that program and recognizing the needs there. Also, during the deficit times, we had decrease the extended time area, and that is for those students who have certain identified criteria. They're at risk. Pregnancy is one, being academically behind, a number of risk factors. ALCs, your alternative learning centers, are a beneficiary of extended time. Your after school or summer school programs are. And the governor is proposing to move that back to the 1.5. It was moved down to 1.2, and he is proposing to reinstate that and fund that at the 1.5 level, and we're really happy to see. Yes, and then we also provide a 2% increase in the formula for that. So Dr. Melcher, my sidekick, is reminding you of that too.
Commissioner Segrin, I just wanted to insert a question right here, and I think, members, that I will take questions as we go along, because I think this is complicated, and it makes sense if we ask the questions as we go. And I'm going to start out with the first one. I appreciate that there, and I know there's some more 2% later when we get around to libraries and so forth, that there's recognition of the need for students that need the LEP and the extended time, and having money on the formula, I think, is a very good thing. I would like to ask about your decision to have it be 2%. I know that the Consumer Price Index is around that, but checking with people who know more about this than I, because I'm certainly not an economist, but the implicit price deflator index is more like 3%, and that is what schools really have to live by more than the Consumer Price Index, because of the heaviness on staff and not being able to replace that with anything more efficient. And so how is it that you're figuring the 2% instead of 3% in terms of keeping up with inflation?
Madam Chair, the 2% is what the governor appropriated for the general fund, and he felt like it was meeting the basic inflation index that, you know, DRI and some of the other economic economists are indicating. And so then the rest of the 2% that's added to all of those is a reflection and consistency with what is being put on the formula. That's the simple answer to it.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that's one of the things we'll have to discuss is, you know, exactly what is inflation, and I think we all have the goal of having our schools and students be funded so that they're not slipping at all in terms of their place with funding. And if we can't even keep up with inflation, then maybe we're not achieving that goal. So I think we'll have to have some discussion of what do we want on this committee to consider inflation, and then what would be extra funding after that. Thank you very much. Representative Brown has a question as well. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, when you state the 2%, and then listed the QComp and the 2% growth to LEP and those categories, is that all come under the 2%, or is that in addition to?
Commissioner Segrin.
It's whatever their base funding is, and then you add 2% to their base. Am I not answering your question?
It might be me trying to oversimplify it. I'm trying to categorize it as I try to understand it. And I'm wondering if each of the categories that you mentioned are inclusive of the 2% that the governor proposed.
Madam Chair and Representative Brown, the appropriation amount that you see there reflects the 2% increase over their base funding. So I hope I've answered that correctly.
Mr. Melcher.
When the general education formula, the basic formula, is increased by 2% the first year, an additional 2% the second year. That drives up the basic formula by $100 the first year, and then an additional $102 the second year. There are some categories of funding that automatically, under current law, go up when you increase the general education formula. For example, the compensatory formula goes up, the sparsity formula goes up, the transportation sparsity formula goes up, and there are a few others. But there are some other formulas that have a fixed dollar amount in statute. So, for example, the limited English proficiency formula and the extended time formula are not indexed to the general education funding formula. And so when the governor makes a recommendation to increase those by 2%, those are additional increases over and above what would happen if you simply increase the general education formula.
Okay. And that's always a controversy here, or a discussion point, as to what is linked to the formula and what isn't. Of course, it's more desirable to be linked to the formula if it's something you want funded. We have Representative Heidgerken and then Representative Demmer. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just as we go through the funding mechanisms and the categoricals, if there are any changes, I would appreciate hearing, for example, LEP, now the five-year window stays the same.
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Heidgerken, yes, we didn't do anything, did we? No, we didn't.
Okay, and then my apologies. I should have been looking at the list here that the staff is keeping. We have Representative Morgan and then Representative Demmer. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Segrin, on the issue of the ATPPS, the so-called QComp, of the portion of the money currently allocated for that program, how much is being accessed by schools who have approved plans?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, thank you. I didn't have that at my fingertips. Dr. Melcher says 51% of the allocated money has been appropriated already. And as I stated earlier, we anticipate that if everyone who has expressed interest in the program is approved, then we would be slightly beyond what we could afford, and that's why in 2009 the governor is proposing to increase it by 10%.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for a follow-up. How much, Commissioner Segrin, would it cost to make this money available for all school districts in the state?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, right now the appropriation that without the 10% increase covers about 48 to 50% of all of the students in Minnesota. So under that scenario, it would be approximately double that you would need. So if it's $86 million now, then and that's including aid and levy, then it would be $160 million, or another 80 or so plus million. And we're proposing a 10% increase of that amount. So,
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was along the same lines, so I'm uncovered. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to now jump to a couple of things. Your staff, Mr. Crow, I think, mentioned the operating capital increasing the equalizing factor, and that is being carried in your budget at $40 million. We had changed that operating capital, which was mostly aid, and we put some levy authority into that, and this is actually providing some property tax relief, if you will. It's not additional money for school districts, but it's shifting back to a more aid program instead of an aid and levy program. So that's where that that $40 million is coming from. I'd like to just jump now to, we talked a little bit about the Successful Schools Program, but the other thing that I want to talk about is the governor's 3R high school proposal. He really wants to, and I think many of you know that over the last year and a half, the Department of Education has been working through a National Governors Association grant on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we know that it's very critical for all of our students to be taking more courses in these areas for the economic future and vitality of our state. Representative Mariani and I have been serving together on the P16 Partnership, which is a consortium of higher education, K-12. He represents the Minnesota Minority Education Partnership. We have business and we have foundations and the Citizens League participating in this. We have been working very diligently on some systemic things to grow the capacity, if you will, of our students. Because we know that if they are not educated at higher levels in these areas, we will not have the kind of workforce that we need in the future. And so the governor has wanted to emphasize the need for looking at our high schools and growing the capacity in the high schools as far as helping educate more of these students. We know, and of course I know as I'm traveling all around the state, that we have some high schools that are doing some really exciting and extraordinary things. For example, we have Project Lead the Way, which is a pre-engineering program. We have, because of our work in the state of Minnesota with the NGA Honors Grant, we actually had a company called PTC come into our state because recognizing that we are doing probably more than any other state in the nation, and this is not bragging, it's just pure fact that we are probably doing more in this state around the STEM discipline. And because of that, they offered free software to any teacher who received training in Pro Engineer 2. Now, this is computer-aided design software, and almost all of our major companies, Medtronic, General Mills, General Electric, you name the companies that have any kind of engineering requirements, and they're using this software. And they came in and said, we would love to train teachers so that they could then use the software. Once a teacher is trained, they receive up to 300 of these software packages, and they can take these and distribute them to their children, their students, and they can have some at home, and they can have some in the classroom. Each one of these software packages is worth $5,000 each. We have 100 teachers right now that have been trained in this Pro Engineer software. And I want to just give you that as an example of some of the neat things that are going on in our schools, and we want to continue to grow the capacity around these things, because also we can have jobs created any place in the state of Minnesota around the STEM disciplines now. We don't have to come to the city. We can stay right in our towns and create these jobs, the software manufacturing kinds of, or the engineering programs, the things that are available can happen. And that's why we were so very interested in growing high schools and giving them the capacity. So you're going to be seeing as we go through this some of the exciting things that we're hoping to do. We'd like to give every school student in high school the opportunity to receive 1 year of dual high school college credit. And that would be whether they take a post-secondary education option, PSEO, whether they take an AP course, or whether they go to a or take a technical course in a technical school or community college, or if they have some kind of a certification that they receive as an intern in a trade. So it runs the gamut of experiences and exposure, but we want to send the message to kids, and we want to give students the incentive to think about the fact that high school is no longer the end-all of their educational experience. They have to have at least a minimum of 2 more years of post-secondary, and that can be in a technical school, a trade school, it can be in a community college, it could be in a 4-year institution.
Commissioner, you probably know, but I have found it quite a luxury on this committee. We have a lot of teachers on this committee, and especially high school teachers, and one of them has a question right now, and the teachers that are on our committee are not just any old teachers. I have found that they are like recognized teachers in their communities with awards, and some are even in the paper, of course, that we just heard about. And, you know, they're teachers of the years. They're, you know, seem to be very bright teachers. I think of all the committees I've been on, this one is just a really exciting education committee because of this wealth of, you know, we don't have to go out always in our communities and find out what do the teachers think. They're right here. And Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Siegman, I'm not sure I'm one of those persons who is just loud. But I did teach for many, many years in the classroom. I wrote and taught at college in the schools course through the University of Minnesota in a number of advanced placement classes. And looking back on that experience, I always reminded my administrative cadre that the College Board had always proposed that there be additional preparation time for AP teachers. I probably could fill this room with a number of essays I've collected over those 30-some years. It's quite a tasking. Quite a task, I should say. And usually there's also a proposal that people who teach these courses have at least an MA. Has your department or the governor done anything to propose providing those kinds of options for people who go into teaching AP or IP courses provide an opportunity or some kind of incentive to keep people in that professional role? It's very difficult. I know I did it for 20-some years. It didn't happen in my district. Are you proposing any options in that regard?
Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Representative Benson and Madam Chair. Yes, last biennium, the governor significantly increased the advanced placement and international baccalaureate monies that actually support the training of teachers in APIB, and he's actually proposing again this year to increase funding again to encourage the development and the training and the support of teachers. In fact, in the advanced placement area, because of the increase in funding, we had an increase, 20% increase in the numbers of students that took advanced placement courses. And in fact, at the national level of the advanced placement, folks said that there was a 10% increase, so we doubled. We met the national and exceeded it by twice. So, yes, we're very aggressive in not only saying you should do these things, but also providing the support for teachers to get the training that they need to receive the kind of support and ongoing support that's needed.
Representative Benson.
Madam Chair and Commissioner Siegman, my question had to do with whether or not the school districts were using these funds to relieve the classroom teachers in providing them additional preparation time, as is recommended by the College Board. Have you followed whether or not the school districts do that? They certainly didn't, of course, when I was there. The money usually just went into the general fund, and there was no relief in the number of students. I had 32 to 33 students in each of my 5 sections during the day. It was a killer. And a lot of people burn out pretty quickly. And if we are serious about seeing to it that these young people get this college preparatory work, and I certainly support that, I think you need to think more seriously about how to relieve the pressure on those classroom teachers. Is there anything in that regard that you're doing specifically?
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, there's nothing in this bill that would provide release time or provide reduced classroom time for teachers. That would be up to the local district to design that, but it's certainly a point well taken as far as the amount of preparation time that is needed for some of these courses.
And I know Commissioner and that Representative Benson is working on a bill as well, so that might be something you include in your bill. Representative Benson.
Alas, would your department be amenable to that kind of requirement?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, I think I would have to see the language before I could comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Commissioner Segrin.
All right, thank you. So to get back to the 3Rs, there are a number of other things that the 3R proposal would require, and one of them that we think is very important is college access support. And that's where Carlos Mariani, Representative Mariani, has been very helpful. The Minnesota Minority Education Partnership has been doing a college access survey and accumulating the information about the numbers and types of kinds of college access programs that are available to students. But more importantly, they have also identified through our work group on P16 Partnership, what are the criteria? What are the criteria that would identify excellent college access programs, the kinds of things that we would want to see if you would want to bring in an adjunct type of program that would support your students, and that would be in preparation, let's say, for the ACT or the SAT. What are the good tutoring programs? What would they look like? What are the kinds of preparation types of programs that would help parents and their students fill out the FAFSA forms that are very complicated? And if you're a first-generation family and your parents have never done this, you may think, I can't afford to go to college. But there are some wonderful college access programs that are doing good things like that, and so they've really helped us in crafting that. So part of this would be the funding. Some of the funding would go to deploying these kinds of college access support programs. And we'll get into more of the detail as we go into the 3Rs, maybe later as we get to that on the budget document. But I wanted to just also talk about kind of the continuum along the system. The governor also is proposing a $4,000 scholarship for, and this is not in this committee, but I wanted to mention it, for at-risk students that are four-year-olds to help them prepare. So what we're looking at is trying to look at a continuum of support and services for all of the students throughout the system. We know it's important at the beginning, and we know that it's important at the culmination, and it's important all the way through. But the governor is trying to be strategic and try to think about things that we need to do to grow capacity and look at systemic changes. We also know that teacher quality is very important, and the support of teachers in the classroom is important. That's why we are supporting the governor's quality compensation, too, because that is really helping teachers come out of the classroom during the day and look at data and try to improve their instruction. So all of these things, we're trying to put the pieces together to grow the system and grow the capacity so that we can be more successful with our students. I'm going to stop now. I've kind of looked at the, sort of given you the highlights of kind of the major proposals, and if you'd like, Dr. Melcher could now go back to Article 1, and we could go through some of the things point by point today, and then in following days finish up the budget.
Let me ask you this, Commissioner. Are you coming back, or is this our one day to get to have you here?
Unfortunately, I will not be able to be back the next 2 days. I have two really critical scheduled meetings that I am going to be talking about. I'm on a panel, and this was scheduled a long time ago, and I don't have any way of getting out of it. But,
okay, thank you. Well, then, members, for the rest of today and the next 2 days, we're going to be grinding through this booklet with Dr. Melcher. And we'll have him here for the next 2.5 days, and we can ask our detailed questions. We'll do that as soon as we finish with Commissioner Segrin. But this is our only opportunity to ask really hard questions about the governor's budget. And Commissioner Segrin enjoys hard questions and is up to the task. And you'll find that when you're dealing with Dr. Melcher, you get factual answers. But if you want, interpretive answers or that sort of thing, we have to go to the elected officials and their commissioners and so forth. So this is really quite a luxury, I think, to have Commissioner Segrin here, and I appreciate that she's here, and I don't think she's had enough hard questions yet. So,
Madam Chair, I really apologize. I regret that I can't be here the next 2 days, and I would have been happy to be here, and I'll be happy to come back. My schedule did not work out, and as you're going through things, if you want to ask more questions, I would certainly be back here to be on the hot seat.
We actually have some. Here they come. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Benson, I do want to visit with you on your bill as well. I have got some issues there that I think that probably will touch base. But we just left off, Madam Chair, with Commissioner brought up the at-risk student, especially in the preschool. But the federal government been visiting that same issue when it comes to special ed. And they came across with some suggestions, but again, no new monies. But they addressed an issue that's, I think that's oftentimes overlooked within the way we are pouring money forth on special education. It's a number one issue, I think, in all of our school districts. And I think that the school districts that I've talked with would like to see more monies appropriated there. An earmark for that program, because it is the fastest growing cost escalator in all of the school districts, I think, in the state of Minnesota. With that said, and I have thought about a bill that I've been looking at is when you look at the third and fourth grade level, generally it's between there that we put students on a program, and some of them are put into a special ed program. The minute we do that, we mark those students. There's a lot of peer influences and everything else in school. And you look at the number of students that do not ever get off the special ed once you put them on. There's a consortium of schools that there's a pilot program that a number of schools belong to that have had great success at the third and fourth grade, where they spend some of the extended time money that they are very successful in keeping students off or out of special ed. They spent money on students that were on the bubble and students that they could get up to where they should be at. I think that that is a critical stage when we talk about special ed. This consortium school, I don't know how long, I think the program's been running 4 or 5 years. They brought the number of students down from 12% to 8% just with school district monies. Can you imagine what we could do if we infuse and more state monies for all of our school districts? But I'm just saying this is something that I know the federal government's been looking at very, very closely, and I'm hoping that the state at the same time is open to any suggestions there.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Heidgerken. Those are really excellent comments, and reminds me that the governor has put an appropriation in for special ed to grow the special education budget by 2% each year of the biennium. In regard to what the federal government is suggesting, and it's called Response to Intervention, or RTI, and as you mentioned, they said you can use your special ed monies to do some interventions to kind of keep students out of special ed if possible. And when this proposal came forth from the federal government, we kind of wanted to say, let's take a little bit of a time out here and look at the kinds of quality intervention strategies that maybe as special education experts all around the state would, examine and look at, so that we had at least some accountability there and some really good methods, if you will, to help intervene with students. And so we've got a few grants that have been allocated to try some various strategies, and we'll be getting some of that information back. And I don't know if you're meaning the one that I'm familiar with, but the St. Croix River Education District has done some extraordinary work, and they actually start in kindergarten and first grade, and they have this wonderful assessment. It's a pre and post. And when they identify those students already, even early, that maybe are struggling with, you know, reading skills particularly, they will immediately start doing interventions with them. And I visited the Hinckley School District that's part of SCRED, and that was 2 or 3 years ago. And they had 68 students in first grade, 3 sections, and none of those students were identified for special education services. And when you're looking at 10 to 12% normally of, you know, kids being in special ed, I went back on my heels and I said, well, what is your secret? And, you know, they said the secret is, you know, really identifying early if you're struggling with a certain area. Maybe it's just not having the fluency to read and helping a student or whatever it is. And they had one student in the class that was still struggling in first grade. And I said, well, is the student going to be, you know, he's learning disabled or, you know, special ed? No, they just think developmentally he's not quite there, and they were going to just continue working with him. So that's what blew me away. And, yes, there are some really good things going on, and we need to look at strategically how we can grow those. If we've got some areas like that, we're very interested in working on those. And, in fact, the SCRED model, you'll see in the Serve Minnesota program, they have actually are delivering it now to preschool students in Head Start and are having fantastic results. So they've used that same model and it's now moved down into the preschool area.
And I know Representative Faust knows a bit about that, too. And he'll be talking about it later. We have, and by the way, members, special ed is one of the things that's not linked to the formula. So we have that. That's one of the discussions we have in this committee, and I'm sure we'll be spending a lot of time later on special ed, and we have a lot of bills that I know are being planned by various members on that topic. So we'll definitely have to find out what's the best way to address a problem that we all know that we have, as Representative Heigerken said. We have Representatives Morgan, Faust, Mariani, Hillstrom, Morrow, Dietrich, and Dominguez. Representative Morgan.
Dr. Melcher is laughing.
He's laughing because maybe he doesn't have to start till tomorrow.
That's why he's laughing.
Jeff Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Segrin, if you would, I'd like to speak for a moment about one-time money in this budget. Just a quick glance at the line item that was prepared here. It seems to me that there's in the neighborhood of $200 million in funding for this biennium that does not get carried over to the next. And it may be a little more or a little less than that, but that's an approximation. Some of it, school technology funding on line 124, I think that makes some sense that might be one-time funding, that you buy something and now it's there and you don't have an ongoing expense for that, or the ongoing expense perhaps is much smaller. But one category that does concern me for a couple of reasons. Line 81, as I understand it, the successful schools grants in the governor's State of the Union speech, State of the State speech, excuse me, sorry, don't want to promote him yet. In the governor's State of the State speech, he spoke of an additional 2% on top of the base 2% on the formula being available to successful schools. Mm-hmm. The first 2% is costed on line 12 at just short of $300 million. My first question would be, is there a particular reason why this second 2% would then be cost at about half of that, or $150 million?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, and yes, Representative Morgan, there is a reason for that. The 2% is your ongoing money that, you know, if you appropriate it in the first year, the second year it doubles. This is one-time money so that it's $75 million in the first year and $75 million in the second year. There's no compounding, if you will. So that's why it looks different. It's not $300 million. It's because the $75 million in the second year is not compounded. It doesn't become $150 million in the second year of the biennium. So that is why it's just a flat 75-75. So each year of the biennium, the districts would be eligible to up to 2%. And actually, Dr. Melcher, I would like to explain a little bit more about the even the implementation or the application of this, if you would so entertain him to do that. Dr. Melcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Morgan. The proposal from the governor, the way it's structured, would provide a fixed $75 million in the first year, and again a fixed $75 million in the second year. The actual amount of funding per student would depend on the percentage of students that are in schools that are deemed successful by virtue of having reached the three stars or made AYP in either reading or in math. The projection is that we would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 or 80% of the students being in schools that are in that circumstance. And so if you compare the $75 million on line 81 with the $93 million on line 12, you'll see that we're projecting the great majority of students, but not all students, to be in schools that are meeting that standard. I believe in the most recent data that we have from 2006, the figure was about 84-85% of the students were in schools that were making AYP in either reading or in math. So the dollar amount in the governor's budget, the way the bill will read, is that it will float between $90 per student and $150 per student, depending on the number of students that are in these successful schools. And the 2% is roughly equivalent to $120 per student, which was the midpoint of that. So it could float between 1.5% and 2.5%, depending on the number.
Ask a follow-up.
Morgan.
Thank you very much for that explanation, Commissioner Stephen and Mr. Melcher, Dr. Melcher, excuse me. My follow-up question to that would be this. Without an expectation that these funds would continue, I know from personal experience, having been a teacher, schools, principals, school districts might be hesitant to spend this money on an ongoing expense such as hiring a teacher or hiring someone to provide an additional program without a guarantee that this funding, even at the base level, is ongoing. Is there are there recommendations that the department has or the governor has of things that would be productive expenditures for these one-time funds?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, yes, the governor was proposing that school districts could use it for technology, to buy additional computers, to upgrade technology. You may have some one-time deferred maintenance issues. You may have you may provide teachers with bonuses throughout the district for, you know, you just, you know, give a one-time bonus to schools, to all staff. You could use it for any kind of one-time expenditure, but it would not be for ongoing salary, you know, negotiations or expenses or creating new positions, because this is one-time money. So there is specific language in the change item page as you get to it that will, you know, say that it's designated for one-time expenses, but there are a lot of things that you could, textbooks, you could buy additional textbooks, things that maybe you've been putting off that you'd like to do that you could use for your students in your classroom.
So it wouldn't really be anything to initiate systemic change or anything like that. It would be ad hoc type smaller ticket items.
Right. And well, Representative, or Madam Chair, it could, though, help with systemic change in that if you really, we're also, you know, have had a lot of call for doing computerized testing, and we know that a lot of districts don't have enough computers to do that kind of thing. So just being able to look at, or just upgrading your computers is really important, too. So there's a lot of deferred maintenance issues that you might be able to take advantage of that also. So we're trying, and we're hoping that, you know, as you're looking at those things, that there would be some opportunity to, you know, to do some things that would look at some systemic support, too. Maybe some additional opportunities for professional development around the STEM discipline, being able to provide some support to staff if they were interested in that.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioner Seidman. My question is regarding the 3R schools. We heard the governor talk about them, and you talked about them. I have two questions about those. Number one is, how many schools do you foresee having? Is this something that you want every high school to get to, or this is something where to have one school, or a number of them, or how many? And the second thing is they're very aggressive goals for what we want those schools to accomplish. Is there a plan somewhere, somehow, to get the added funds that we would need to accomplish some of those goals?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Faust. The intent would be that every high school would be eligible for the appropriation. The goal that requires that every student have the opportunity or the ability to take 1 year of dual credit courses, college level courses, would take effect for this year's fourth graders, so there would be opportunity. It's not going to happen tomorrow or next year, but that would be an opportunity for schools to grow that over time. So this money is appropriated to help grow that over time. The other things that 3R high schools are also eligible to use their money for would be, as I mentioned before, college access programs, also developing personal graduation plans for each student. Those were one of the things, actually, that under the research that actually Representative Mariani did, that this was a really important part of high school success and getting kids to think about the importance of post-secondary education. Then looking at highly qualified teachers and principal leadership, the idea that if you're going to have a high school, that you want to make sure that all of your teachers and principals are supported and help professionally, and that you're a team, working together on those things. And then the rigorous and relevant course taking, looking and examining your courses and seeing if you need to change any of them or enhance them or do the kinds of restructuring that you might want to do provide more courses. I think the fundamental idea is to set the expectations higher for all students, and not all students are going to be ultimately getting a job and wearing a white lab coat, but there are so many opportunities now for students that we need to avail our children of so that they can get the kinds of successful jobs in the future. Medtronic, for example, not many of our children necessarily will be in Medtronic and being a very high-powered scientist or engineer, but there are many spin-off companies that Medtronic uses, and I'll give you an example. I have a friend who owned a company, a plastics company, and he used to just stamp out the discs, the big discs that had the big tapes on for computers. His company evolved eventually into being a provider of the heart plastic support pieces to the heart valve that Medtronic had designed. And his company then became a spin-off company, if you will, for Medtronic. And Medtronic has many of these such companies. And when I was visiting his company, I saw a number of people doing CAD around these very highly, technical and very important pieces of medical technology that are going inside of people. And I said, are these engineers that are doing this work? And he said, oh, no, these are people that have an AA degree from a technical school. And they have the specs for Medtronic, but now they are the ones that are, highly trained and know exactly how to use CAD to design the components that are going to be stamped out, of course, in the machines that make these parts. I asked how much these people were starting at as starting salaries, and they said, $60,000 to $70,000, and we're going begging for this kind of high-quality technical expertise, but it doesn't take a four-year degree or a PhD. It takes some training. So that's what we know. We need to have more students understanding the importance of this and getting all levels of opportunity out there so that they're thinking about those opportunities.
Speaking of Representative Mariani, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Welcome. It's good to see you again. I had the privilege of serving on this committee when you chaired it and enjoyed our working professional relationship when you were here in the House, and continue to enjoy that as you carry out your duties as a commissioner here. And we've had a great opportunity through my other work to interact quite a bit in a number of forums. And it's I have to say that as I look at, you know, just sort of the big picture of the governor's proposals here, I see a number of our common work over the last couple of years popping out here in really good ways. So I'm real pleased to see that. And members, I do want you all to know that I hope to be able to have a policy review. We'll let this committee deal with the tougher, in some ways tougher money things, but I would like to have you, perhaps you or some of your staff come and do a policy review for our committee, in the coming days.
Mr. Mariani, I just have to say, I have always thought the policy issues are much harder than the money issues.
Well, I'm trying to lull them to sleep now. I want to ask you about the LEP. We haven't had a chance to talk about that, and we were on the same committee several years ago when we did the cap on the LEP that year. That issue has come up a number of times with some of our committee members and on my committee as an issue. We've been round-robbing members' feedback on what they're hearing from their districts. It's great that we've got, you know, the 2% increase in regards to LEP funding, but as you probably know, I've always been concerned about the decision to cap that off at 5 years. I'm wondering, if the department has, or perhaps the department would be willing to do this, to do a review of the five-year cap and really do it hopefully in a good research-based way, because I think it's important that research and evidence-based information guide our much of our decision-making. Anyway, if you can just share a little bit with us to what degree of any department has been thinking about revisiting that issue with the cap and what your, if your the department will be amenable to taking a very careful look at this issue.
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, Senator Mariani, I'm not sure exactly what you would want us to study, so I'd have to get some clarification. I know that there's a lot of research that says that it takes about 7 years for a student to really acquire and be, you know, proficient in another language. As far as if you want us to do an analysis of how many students hit the five-year cap and maybe still need to stay in ELL, we'd have to, you know, probably do some kind of a survey with school districts. So I'm not quite sure which way you want us to go. I think the research is out there. Back when we put the five-year cap on, and this was my own personal viewpoint, I felt like it should have been seven. If we were going to cap, at least it should have been seven in conference committee. However, my position did not prevail on that at that point. So, and we didn't discuss it, frankly. That was not part of the discussion with the governor. The discussion around with the governor was really trying to start to grow the appropriation because, you know, as an appropriation stays stagnant, it loses its buying power. And we know that this is becoming a larger issue all around our state. And so that was really the discussion. Certainly you, as the legislative body, can have that discussion and propose that. You know, you have to figure out the appropriation. And but, you know, as far as the philosophical, you know, or the research-based process, you know, 7 years always made sense to me. But I'm only speaking for myself as me.
I suspect that Representative Mariani's committee and this committee will take a look at that issue.
Madam Chair, yes, I would like to do that, and I will certainly work with you, Commissioner, and your staff, and shaping up some good parameters around some good research-based evidence to support whatever changes we might come up with.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
If we're going to do a study, just give us some money to help us.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First I want to make a comment and then I'll ask a question. First on the increasing the capacity for high school. I have a daughter who has done PSEO, and she's done it for 2 years, plus she took AP classes in high school. And she will graduate this year with 70 college credits, so she's more than halfway to a four-year degree by the time she graduates high school. So that opportunity is currently available to the top 50% of their class across the in many areas in the state, not all across the state. And so I really am in favor of growing that capacity. But one of the challenges, and I hope you'll look at this, is then as we looked at colleges that were not in Minnesota, many of them said if you got college credit while you were still in high school, we will give you zero credit. So places like Northwestern University, where she should be looking at, said we won't count any of those. So as we're looking at where we want to invest our dollars, we need to make sure that we do it in a compatible way so that our students are not put at a disadvantage. So that's my comment.
Can I just comment back?
Mr. Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Hillstrom, that is a dilemma, you know, for students that stay in Minnesota, PSEO and college and the schools and concurrent enrollment are fairly well recognized. Sometimes even with concurrent enrollment, sometimes it's not transferable. We do know that advanced placement, international baccalaureate, because they're nationally recognized programs, generally are more accepted outside of our borders and in just about any high-level school that, unless they're very competitive. Harvard probably doesn't care if they're getting, the creme de la creme. But as far, there are many high, most of the time advanced placement and international baccalaureate are recognized by most schools. I don't want to make a generalized statement, but Benson is shaking his head no. So you can correct me. But I know my experience with my own daughter, too, was that she had her first, her freshman year, forgiven, if you will, and she entered sophomore status and got a double degree in 3.5 years. So it's a wonderful opportunity for students, and she was outside of the state of Minnesota. She wasn't in a college in Minnesota. But, to the extent that we can, I think behind all of it is just to really encourage kids to take advantage of opportunities to take the higher level courses, even if you don't get credit for it. Even if you take an advanced placement course or whatever, the college level course is, we do know, research does tell us, that a student is going to be much more successful when they get to college because of the rigor, the application that they've had to use, just the exercise of the brain. They've stretched their brain more. So it really, really does help, regardless of whether they get the credit in the end. If you take these courses, it's really going to help you in the long run, professionally and as a student in college. So that's, the other underlying reason why we want to do this, too.
And then Representative Hillstrom, you had a question.
Absolutely. Given that we want kids to expand their horizon, I'm very concerned about the proposal to give 3-star schools a bump, because I represent districts that the schools that I have, in many instances, didn't get 3 stars, mm-hmm. not because they didn't have tremendous growth or tremendous success, but because they have so many challenges to overcome that while they're having tremendous growth, they are not achieving on a standardized test due to limited English or higher special ed or all sorts of other factors. And so my question is, wouldn't we actually be in a better position to do the reverse and encourage these schools that are having tremendous growth to implement additional programs that many of the schools that are already getting 3 stars are achieving so that their kids can go on and do things like, these AP classes and, college in the school?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Hillstrom. Well, we would certainly be open to looking at some kind of a growth model or recognition of students making, significant growth over time, beating the odds type of schools. I know under the star rating, there are 2 additional ways to earn stars, and I don't have the language in front of me. I was going to bring that does recognize that you are compared to other demographic sites. You have, beat the odds or whatever. So there is some of that in there, but We're certainly open to that. You know, that is the dilemma of, you know, and we've often talked even in past years about we get frustrated. Why aren't we rewarding schools for doing a good job, too? So you have schools that work really hard, and they never get, you know, any kind of, you know, reward for that either. So it is this, you know, you don't want to, you're not punishing, you're not trying to punish those that are really have harder demographics to work with, but yet we know that even in those sites we have sites that beat the odds, and they should be rewarded too, and yet you also need the infrastructure to help those others. So we're open, you know, to suggestions. You know, this is a starting point. I always say we're always filing off the rough edges on things, and whether it's something that, you know, you all propose or we all propose, this is a process that we go through and talk through. And
we appreciate that. It sounds like Representative Hilstrom might be working on an alternative.
All right.
We know we're not going to get to Dr. Melcher, but I would like to get to the last three questioners. And so if the questioners and the answerers could shorten it up just a little bit, we have Representative Morrow, Representative Dietrich, and Representative Dominguez. Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair, thank you. Commissioner Segrin, I recently came from the St. Peter's School District where we do 4 years of science and math, so I'm with you on STEM. We have a teacher with the AutoCAD. We don't have the technology. I think you touched on that a moment ago. And some of the initiatives from committee members on pages 82 and 84 talking about the need for a comprehensive assessment system and talking about diagnostic and predictive information on computer-based formative assessment.
Oh, okay.
And my concern, Commissioner, is that the $19 million in the governor's budget for technology isn't going to fulfill the needs for schools around the state to be able to have the computer equipment and similar technology in order to achieve the other initiatives. So my question is, how is the $19 million figure arrived at, and are there other sums that would enable schools throughout our state to achieve the other initiatives in the governor's proposal?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, and Representative, is it?
Morrow.
Morrow? I'm sorry, I forgot your name for a minute. Certainly, I'll talk about the proposal for a formative assessment first. There's been a great interest in formative assessment, that's more meaningful for teachers and to get some information during the school year, you know, so you can have a pre and post kind of assessment. And so we are really working on, we would like to develop that line to the MCA so that you would have both the summative that we have to have under No Child Left Behind, we have no choice on that, but then have a formative that we could really deliver and provide for schools. You asked about technology issues. The governor has proposed the monies, and the money would, as I understand it, and I don't, I could quick, you know, get through to the change item page, but the way I understand it, it would be going to those schools that have higher need and need to build their capacity versus others that maybe have, you know, the opportunity. An example would be the access issue for the internet, where you know that the costs for accessing the internet are much higher in rural areas than they are in the metropolitan area where you have much cable and access. So the idea would be to address those higher need areas and try to build the capacity and target the money so that there's a more even distribution of technology. And then the other issue would be to try to have a standardized process so that we're not, you know, buying computers that are not really applicable for the future. You know, we want to make sure that they are the kinds of technology that we need and can be interfaced with each other.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just to, you know, just share the comment, I think that the $19 million is terribly inadequate to reach the, what I agree with you, our laudable goals regarding individual growth assessment, online learning, graduation retesting, and the like.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Segrin, along those lines, could you do you anticipate that $19 million would be enough to get us to the point of taking our science tests online?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Dietrich, Probably not.
And those are...
Representative Dietrich.
I'm sorry. Those are scheduled for 09, is that correct?
Commissioner Speaker.
Madam Chair and Representative Dietrich, they were scheduled for 09. We've done field testing, and at this point, there are a number of issues. It's not only technology issues, but we also know that if we're going to do this, it's going to probably take 3 weeks of testing time. And that 3 weeks that kids will not be in the classroom accessing computers. So in the dilemma of trying to deliver online testing that everyone wanted, we have now, you know, discovered that there are some other downsides to this issue, you know. So I think probably what we'll be doing, and this is a dilemma for all states, frankly, they'll always, you know, we'll probably have some paper pencil and some online. It's probably going to be some kind of a transitional. And now you're getting into an area that I shouldn't be talking a lot about. You should be having my technology gurus and our assessment and testing people here. So we are struggling with that because we want to address the needs of, you know, requirement to turn around our tests. The other issue with testing is... we could deliver the results much quicker if we didn't have constructive response in our testing program. But when we ask about whether districts and teachers would be willing to drop that or try to maybe deliver the results of that later and just do the multiple choice, et cetera, there's still a very strong pushback from the field, from the educational field, saying, no, we want constructive response. And that takes longer. That's why tests do not come back as fast as they could. So we're all of these policy issues and discussion have ups and downs and pros and cons. And then they have, you know, spin-off consequences because of it. So we struggle with this issue just as much as you all do, and how we're going to do it. So one of our, you know, proposals certainly is looking at a formative test. We still have to do our systems test, but we're trying to build an infrastructure where we can get good information back to our schools and
And we will have bills on technology when we do have your staff here that are detailed. I want to get in the last questioner, Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just also want to invite Commissioner Seagrams to our meeting next Tuesday. I think she will get some very good information. If you could make it, please do so. But my question is around teachers. A lot of our districts are suffering from lack of teachers that teach courses that they weren't trained under or not certified under. What incentives are you giving these teachers that do teach a course that they're not trained under? Are they able to get the certification? Is there a line item under this bill that says that they can be retrained? You know, again, a lot of our districts are suffering from that.
Commissioner Seagrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Dominguez, Board of Teaching, of course, is in charge of the certification and licensure of teachers, but we have a number of initiatives that we are proposing. One of them is Math and Science Academies. We know that we have many teachers who are undereducated, if you will, in those areas, or they need to have, you know, some of the skill updated, especially in light of, you know, the demands that are going to be placed on our students in the future. So that's one area that we're looking at, just in the math and science area. We also have the mentorship program that we're proposing. But then there is some additional, because of highly qualified teacher requirements under No Child Left Behind, we have to put in place, we have to identify those districts who do not have highly qualified teachers, and we're supposed to have 100% of our teachers highly qualified. And if they do not, we have to put in place plans and improve and also look at individual support for teachers and help the districts in getting their teachers highly qualified. So if they are teaching out of that certification area, there has to be a plan in place and work together. And actually, you should probably be talking to Pat King, who is under our school improvement, and Jesse Montgomery.